Today's program has been pre-recorded. Now a special Talk Radio 1210 WPHT presentation. It's Readin', Writin', and Reason. Now here's your host, Dom Giordano.
Hey, welcome in everyone to this week's edition of Readin', Writin', and Reason with Dom Giordano, Henry, and Dan producing. A lot of stuff happened this week on the show. This week we'll hear from Riley Gaines, a lot more on the issue of women in sports and what she's doing about it. And we'll also hear from Upper Darby, the superintendent, Dan McGarry, because Upper Darby this week, I think shockingly, voted to spend $1.1 million to put in a metal detector system. It's different than the metal detectors, but it's same concept because of the trouble they're having. He'll be here to lay that out, and yet Upper Darby doesn't have an appetite to have school resource officers that would be armed there. Now, we got some calls on this, and I wanted to tell you that Josh Shapiro is a compromise in the budget. Agreed with Republicans that every school district in Pennsylvania must, I think they get $50,000 each, they must have a school resource officer trained, but it's the decision of the school board in the local district whether or not they're armed with a weapon, with a gun. That's still out there. They want it to be mandatory, which I wish they had. So Upper Darby with this, I get the concern. They have 4,400 kids. You'll hear McGarry coming up here on Readin', Writin', and Reason. But the bottom line is there's a million doors in a school, and if a shooter wants to just march right in, you know the sad story. That's the way that it goes. So you'll hear from him this week. Big issues, big guests. That's what we like to bring. An issue that still may come up in this election, here it comes again, the temporary student loan grace period protecting borrowers with missed or late payments will end later this month, meaning September. Nearly 10 million borrowers were past due on their payments as of January per a government accountability office. So, you know, this whole thing with student loans, why should this be different than anything else? Well, it just is, and we'll see if it plays out along with all the big issues that are out there. And as we look at the crisis in schools, and this isn't going to be addressed in this race, sadly, back to COVID, you know how much American students had slipped, even the better schools, because of all the Zooming and all the other nonsense. Now, Democrats want climate literacy in schools as actual literacy slips. Both fourth and eighth grade students in 2022 had fallen by 3 points relative to 2019, according to the National Assessment of Educational Progress. And yet, rather than the urgency that should be addressed around that, fewer than 50% of all fourth grade students were able to read at or above the standard for proficiency in 2022. Only 17% of black students, 21% of Latino pupils meeting the mark. What's their plan? They want media literacy and climate literacy. Oh, yeah, climate literacy. That's what we need. Again, isn't it simple? You may want to do that, you may not. But how can you do that when we don't have basic literacy? How can they be literate in that when they can't read, write, and think that well? One of the big stories this week that is out there is we finally have a number of the major colleges, the Ivy League and other schools, releasing their class of 2028, the new students, the freshmen coming in, and the categories, the demographics that they fit in. MIT, to me, is the one that is following the law. At MIT, the percentage of white enrollees dropped to 37% from 38, but the percentage of Asian enrollees rose to 47% from 40%. The number of black enrollees in the freshman class dropped by 5 percentage points from 15%, dropped to 5 from 15%, and the percentage of Hispanic enrollees dropped to 11% from 16%. Schools like Yale and others, it seems to me, maybe Harvard, are defying what the Supreme Court ruling has said. So expect you're going to see another shootout here before the Supreme Court. You're going to see a lot more lawsuits as these colleges continue to try to tell us they're following what the Supreme Court decision was, discrimination against Asian students in the name of affirmative action, in the name of diversity. And we know now about the big story the last couple of days about corruption in New York, allegations of that of the mayor and others. Wow, this is quite a place, New York City. The Chancellor David Banks, New York Post says this week, he gave the State of Our Schools address. He proved himself profoundly unserious about teaching the city's kids. The only metrics he cited in an hour-long remarks were 1,000 students are participating in a climate change program, and the City Department of Education has registered 85,000 high schoolers and others. Not a mention of the truancy rates that have soared in the wake of the pandemic school closures, they write. He didn't touch at all on the hard reality of education in the Big Apple. Instead of offering such platitudes as public schools are the foundation of both this city and our priority, an empty boast that students graduate equipped to be a positive force for change, he did not offer any metrics. And the Post would have you believe he didn't do that because they are awful. So how long does this go on? How long in America are you going to see stories like that before people say enough and ask, who is it that is blocking better schools? Well, by and large, we know that conservatives, maybe Republicans, are completely for school choice, helping parents with their own tax money to make a decision as a parent, charter schools, private schools, the Catholic school system, all of those options. Is that issue not important enough to vote on? We don't want to be single issues, but it would seem to me that voting on your children's future is something that should be apparent enough if we really care about education and parental rights to be voting on. All right, we have a lot more this week on Reading, Writing, and Reason. Riley Gaines will be coming up to talk about some of the things she's doing, some of the breakthroughs around all these issues of transgender and women's sports. But particularly this week, thanks to great producers, we have the, a little bit later in the podcast, in the show this week, we have the superintendent of schools in Upper Darby. He's the one that this week got Upper Darby School District to say they're going to spend $1.1 million more on this AI-related security system that will jam up students for 40 to 60 minutes a day just trying to get in the schools because they've had some students get weapons or ammunition into school recently. It's a huge school district, 4,400 students. Wow. One of the biggest two in the state. And it's a school district that I think has fallen on hard times as far as academic success. I don't think it's that good anymore. And it used to be one of those blue ribbon school districts. Why is that? Well, you'll hear him lay out for me some of the reasons they're going to spend that money and inconvenience everybody, because this thing goes off even if you have a Chromebook, even if you have a binder, even if you have an eyeglass case, it could go off. That's a lot to do, don't you think? How about having some armed school resource officers there? Wouldn't that be a better solution? So we try to bring you each week on Reading, Writing, and Reason, locally and nationally, people that are making news, people that are on the front lines of the issues where there's a lot of controversy, a lot of money being spent. Coming up, real friend of my Noon to 3 show and the podcast Reading, Writing, and Reason, Riley Gaines, who has stepped up and jumped out there and just makes a huge difference, inspiring other young women to stand up and say enough with this madness. against women in sports. Riley Gaines is next here on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT on Reading, Writing, and Reason.
Today's program has been pre-recorded.
I'm going to teach you.
Hey, welcome back to Reading, Writing, and Reason. Riley Gaines has become almost a household name, and here on the station, we love each time she visits us. She on this podcast has an update on several things she's doing on Fox Nation and her own foundations and some of the issues that are still moving forward with women in sports. Here's the great Riley Gaines. Riley, congratulations. It's been a while. Thanks for joining us.
Well, I'm always thrilled to join you, so thank you for having me on.
Tell us about the docuseries. Where do we get it, and what are you doing?
Yes, goodness gracious. It's crazy to, I mean, even you think about the past 2 years of my life, and now I get to add best-selling author to my resume, and now executive producer of the docuseries Transfixed. It is a four-part docuseries, so there are four episodes. You can find it on Fox Nation. You can check that out at foxnation.com. But really what this is, it's, you know, when I was kind of thrust into this realm of understanding the gender ideology movement, understanding the political sphere, of course, I initially saw this as a threat to women's sports, but now I realize it is so much bigger. It is so much broader than that. The victims in this story are the children who have had their bodies mutilated. And so this docuseries, you know, we spend a little time talking about the sports stuff, but we get into children who have transitioned and then detransitioned and really what they describe themselves as medical experiments. We talk to families who have lost their children. One family in particular who hasn't seen their child in years because CPS got involved, took their child, the government took their child. They don't even know if their child is still alive.
Wow. And Riley, to that point, particularly Governor Walz, I'm not sure if you explored in this because it's just recent that he's been put into that slot. His state and what he's doing was doing exactly that. If the parent balks at this, they're in danger of losing the child.
Of course. And I think that's the most terrifying part about all of this and something a lot of people don't realize. I mean, we even heard, goodness gracious, this week, in the past few days, we saw Kamala Harris in an interview. Speaking on a stage, she doesn't really do interviews, if you haven't noticed. We saw her speaking on a stage, yeah. And she said, you know, when I was growing up, children were for the community, and that's how it should be. Children should be for the community. And the quote itself was nonsensical, something very, you know, circular.
Well, hold up on that. We just happen to have that, Jim. This is cut nine to Riley's point. Here is VP Harris when she grew up about the children of the community.
I grew up understanding the children of the community are the children of the community.
Which, that's the initial reaction, right, to laugh because it is so, that's just what she does. It's almost like she's a high school student trying to reach her word count in an essay she has to write for an English
class. The book report, right, yeah.
Exactly. But really, if you think about what she's saying, if you can get past how absurd the verbiage and the words she uses are, if you can think about what she's saying, and she's telling you openly, confidently to your face, is that your kids don't belong to you, your kids should belong to the government. That should be a really terrifying statement, regardless of any political affiliation, regardless of any identity factor. That should be a terrifying statement for your average, everyday American voter to hear.
Absolutely. So, Riley, we were thinking about you, too, since it's been a while. The PIAA in Pennsylvania just announced, that the Philadelphia Eagles and Steelers were both behind this, that flag football will now be a official female sport in Pennsylvania. And I made mention of the fact it's acknowledging that few, if any, females want to play tackle football and that this is an outlet of football for them. And it led, of course, to the stuff that you're famous for. This is what women's sports are all about. Now it's going to be an official state sport. Over 100 schools already have females in this. The question will be, though, will they put some male in there who'll run amok and just run over top of people or straight arm them so they can't take the flag away?
I think, you know, the creation of flag football, you know, creating women's teams, I think that's a great alternative. And you said it, you know, if we talk a lot about men and women's sports, but the problem exists of women and men's sports. Again, the same issues, safety and fairness. You have a woman on the football field. I mean, any boy, any man who's raised right doesn't want to tackle a woman at full speed. And so I think it's a great alternative for women to be able to compete and be able to play. But, again, if you allow men, it undermines everything that the sport, that the league, that it was created to uphold and protect. I imagine those issues will exist given your state and given the leaders of your state.
Well, right, and it was thrilling to see this. The Philadelphia Eagles are providing a lot of money, and the Pittsburgh Steelers, and they push this PIAA, which is a really backward organization, to do it pretty quickly, and instantly 100 schools are involved. This is what you and I share in this, because I have sisters that were college athletes, and you're one of all time. This is the avenue that we've always wanted. All the things that come out of women participating, as you did, at the highest levels, why in the world ruin that? So I hope that VP Harris, the more serious thing your docuseries is about, of course, but I hope she's asked about this stuff with women in sports, because I know that a lot of people that love competition in sports, they are outraged over this still to this time. Have we seen other women speaking up, though, you know, over the last few months? Are there any examples in this arena?
Definitely. Unfortunately, as these pretty tragic scenarios continue to happen really at an exponential rate, especially with school going back, goodness gracious, with colleges going back after what the Biden-Harris administration has done to Title IX, rewrote it, abolished Title IX, actually, as it was originally implemented. Boys are now allowed to compete on women's collegiate teams. And so I talk to athletes, Dom, every single day. I talk to athletes who, for example, the San Jose State University volleyball team, where they have a male playing, injuring women, giving women concussions. I mean, career-ending injuries. But guess what their record is? It's 6-0. They haven't lost. It's the first time they've gone 6-0, I believe, in school history. You can do your own deductive reasoning,
sure.
but well, they have a male on their team now.
I happen to be flipping through ESPN the last couple of days, and both nights, in prime time sort of, they were featuring women's volleyball, and a couple of these women were unbelievable. A couple of the spikes were unbelievable. But I'm picturing a 6'1", 6'2" male doing what these women did with the added power. And people don't realize how injured you could be just from volleyball.
No, take Peyton McNabb, for example.
Right.
She was a high school senior at the time, but and this was almost 2 years ago now. But, I mean, you described the scenario almost exactly where a boy jumps up, he spikes the ball, it hits her in the face. She's immediately knocked unconscious, where she laid for many minutes before finally coming back around. And even still to this day, Dom, actually over 2 years ago, she's partially paralyzed on her right side. Her vision is impaired. Her memory is impaired. She has to have special accommodations for testing at school because she can't retain information like she once could. She was supposed to play softball in college. This injury, it ruined that, and it has permanent effects on her life now.
Well, Riley, it is amazing. You are opening new avenues all the way. We lost a great dentist, or maybe that's down the road. I have Dr. Benz here. But Riley Gaines, if you were in the area, we'd have to check that out. So people should go to Fox Nation right now. And I guess that's that, you know, they can watch it at their leisure, your docuseries around all these issues. What's upcoming for you? Anything in the immediate future in addition to that?
Goodness, I'm taking it day by day. Really just a big push of mine over these next few months is getting back on college campuses, really, really trying to engage the youth, right? Mobilize the youth. It's what, I mean, Charlie Kirk, he was just in your area with Vivek. It's what they do so well. And so to be a part of that movement is really important to me. You know, I see as a young woman, this is not historically a base, a demographic that votes Republican. And so really trying to open the eyes of younger people. I'll be coming to Pennsylvania, all over the nation, really. I think in the next 45 or so days on about 20 different college campuses. So,
wait a minute. We got to get you to Philadelphia. Tell Dan we got to get you here in studio. We'll shuttle you over. What do we have to do?
Come on, I'm there. Easy. Easy peasy.
All right, Dino, you don't know the schedule yet, though, when you'll be here in Pennsylvania, in the Philadelphia area?
I'll find out, and I'll send you over a schedule. I'll text you.
That would be great. Riley, thank you so much. As always, what's the website for all things Riley Gaines?
You can check out RileyGainesCenter.org, and that has a more comprehensive list of the college campuses I'll be at and such. And then, of course, follow along on X. That is Riley_Gaines_.
Thank you, Riley. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Dom. Thank you.
All right, that's Riley Gaines. We have her on every opportunity. She's in the center of the action. Coming up, the big interview of Reading, Writing, and Reason this week is the superintendent of schools over in Upper Darby, Dan McGarry, who was good enough to come on, because he knows that I'm on the other side on this, to talk about why are they going to go to a security system eyeballing students that may take 40 to 60 minutes for students to get into the building every day because of the fear of school shootings, but no school resource officer who's armed with a firearm. Dan McGarry is next here on Reading, Writing, and Reason.
Today's program has been pre-recorded.
I'm gonna teach ya.
Hey, welcome back into Reading, Writing, and Reason with Tom Giordano. Dan McGarry's been on my show before. We've had him on Reading, Writing, and Reason to talk about Upper Darby School District, which is a big district. A lot of people know it. A lot of controversy this week. The school board voted at his recommendation to fund at $1.1 million the security system that I guess is used at airports and places like that also. Here's what Dan McGarry told me in defense of doing this. Superintendent, welcome back to the show. Thank you very much for joining us.
No problem, Tom. Thank you.
So a lot of things to unpack with this. First, I usually stay on top of numbers like this. I was surprised to see, Dan, that the school is 4,400 students. When I went to Newman back in the day, it was about 3,500. And when you tell people that, it seems enormous. Is it the biggest in the state?
We usually run neck and neck with places like Reading High School. Reading's okay. A little bit bigger, but depending on enrollment, we're probably in the top 3 to 4 largest brick-and-mortar public high schools in the Commonwealth.
And what does that do with this problem? Does that exacerbate it due to those numbers?
I'm sure anytime there's a weapon on school property, it's stressful. But yes, given the size of a building like our high school and our two middle schools, anytime you have to enter into an emergency situation. Now, in this particular situation, we did not go into a lockdown. We went into a lock-in. But if you do go into a lockdown, only the police can release you from that type of an emergency, and that could take hours sometimes, because only the police can go door-to-door to release you from that type of level of emergency. So the size of our school definitely does play a large part in adding to the trauma of a situation.
Okay. And the situation was, I wanted to ask, and if it's confidential, that's okay. Do you have school resource / police that are armed with a firearm?
No, it's not. It's not confidential. I've talked about this publicly over a lot of years. You can read about it in the paper. We've processed through trying to implement armed security over years. Obviously, for a lot of reasons, there's pros and cons. Over those conversations, our public and our board felt that was not a direction they wanted to go in. So we implemented a lot of other proactive and supportive measures in our district that I've processed through a lot. I'm happy to share those with you. Just like we've talked about, weapon detection systems over the last several years. It just so happened that over the course of this year, some of the attitudes toward adding other safety layers changed. And so weapon detection systems became a topic that the board and community wanted to revisit.
Have you ever had school board meetings, and have you taken a position, I'm a fan of the school resource officer versus this, even though I understand the problems you're having. First of all, the cost, but then the convenience of this. Is it really going to take 40 to 60 minutes to process through the system each day?
I think when we first get this up and running, it's all going to be about compliance. If we can have students ready to go with their Chromebooks out, making sure that if they have any eyeglass kit or an umbrella on a certain particular day, that they would pass that to the side. It could get down as quickly as 15 to 20 minutes. But we think in the beginning, it'll be new. It could take that long. We've gone and visited locations where this has been in place, where, you know, one particular school that's as large as ours, we visited a couple of years ago, and then we visited again recently, and it's improved dramatically how quickly kids are getting into school. But again, it's through compliance and our ability to over-communicate before these get in. We're going to create videos with kids and put out to the public, like, this is what it's going to look like when we process through the systems here in our schools. And hopefully it won't be 40 to 60 minutes, but I wanted to be honest with the public. When we implement this, this is what we should anticipate early on.
Well, you are being, and I appreciate that. It seems, too, more parental support, at least according to what I can get in the news, to do this maybe versus in the past. But what's driving that, though? What is it that's driving more parents saying they agree with this now, apparently?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, time and place and what's going on in society has a lot to do with people evolving and growing and changing their opinions. You know, I don't want to relitigate the past. Obviously, I was on the opposite end of opinions at that time. I'm happy to be where we are today. It's unfortunate that we've had to have these conversations, but I think our community is recognizing how much social media is influencing kids. The cell phones are influencing kids. A lot of the rhetoric in society and unfortunately, the division that exists in the country. I think there is that fear, and I think people have come together to recognize if we can come together as a community and see this as a proactive positive instead of positioning this as, hey, our schools look like prisons, it's all in how we come together as a community and process through
that. But to that point, Superintendent, I don't know of any suburban schools in the Philadelphia area, do you, where they have a system like this in place? It's pretty rare, isn't it?
Yeah, there are some neighboring school districts in Delaware County that do have it in place, and some schools that are not neighboring to us, I don't want to put them out there, that do have it
okay.
That we visited. But there are school districts in Delaware County, and there are school districts in the Commonwealth that do have these weapon detection systems in place.
I wanted to go back to the school resource officer, though, and without getting into the details, because I don't want to put out any ideas, you know, I'm respectful of all this. But it seems to me, my years in school, the problem is there's a lot of open doors and trying to lock that down. I'm not sure what you, and that's why I asked you about the size of the school. I've been in schools with 50, 60 different doors, and somebody that wants to do something waits for an opportunity, knows the door is open. Uvalde was an example of that, and that's how they enter. That's why I still think a school resource officer who's armed or several people that are armed is the option. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I've had this conversation over years with our board and our public. And right now, you know, the more proactive preventative mental health issues that our kids are facing and solutions for those kids have been the focus of our board and community. There has not been an appetite to implement armed security. Have we had conversations? Yes. Will we continue those conversations? Of course. You know, personally, you know, looking at maybe how do we have our Upper Darby Police be a part of that? And one of the creative things that we've done, we have a program in our high school, thanks to the partnership with our chief of police, Tim Bernhardt, who we think is a superstar. We have a TAPS program, Teens and Police Academy, where we do have police officers in our high school teaching a course with high school students and an academy. And we do have a regular police presence in our schools and in our areas to build relationships with our kids. My hope would one day be that we can talk about how the township maybe in the school district can partner and that maybe the budget can offset some of the township's budget. And we could talk about what would that look like having Upper Darby Police different than our own armed security in our schools. Those conversations will continue to evolve, I think, over time. Right now, you know, of course, could the door get propped open? I processed through this Tuesday night. We do have doors that are camered and alarmed where, you know, our CCTVs will alert the individual watching the camera that door has been propped open. So those things do exist. We've added layers of technology, but it's a fair point that you make. Things could happen. Nothing is perfect. And we did not position this weapon detection system as an absolute.
We're talking with the superintendent of schools in Upper Darby. Is this $1.1 million a one-time cost? What's the ongoing cost?
Yeah, so in total, over a four-year span, we're looking at $1.163 million. That cost does not include the new middle school that we're building in Clifton Heights, where we'll have to add the same technology that's there. It's all for our current three secondary schools, and that's total for 4 years. In year one of that total cost, it's a little over $900,000. That's for the hardware and the software year one. In the following 3 years after year one, it really is about the software cost that ranges from under $40,000 to $7,500 for the device we're putting back by the football stadium. But the residual cost will be in the software, not the hardware.
Why have you here? Because of your expertise on this and balance on this. I'm not a fan of all these school drills. I think there were many too many. Last year I taught in high school. There was maybe one fire drill a year. Jersey, I think, is cracking down on this. And sometimes these are very graphic, as you know. I don't know how we ever got there. I think that's a mistake, particularly with younger kids. How about the number of drills each year, shooter drills and the like? What's your sense that works with kids that's effective without going overboard?
Yeah, we do not do, your words, the overboard creating added trauma for our drills. We do, however, as per the law in Pennsylvania, in the first 90 days of school, complete active shooter training.
Okay.
I will say that ours are not, you know, having like a pretend shooter in the building. We don't add that trauma in our schools. We have unbelievable police officers. Our Upper Darby police are stellar in how we handle our drills. We don't tell people in advance, of course, that they're happening. But I will tell you, they've been invaluable. I mean, on September the 3rd and September the 13th, because of our training and practices, I do believe, although there was some trauma, that we didn't go into a lockdown. We were able to go into a lock-in. So classroom procedures and education was still able to take place, and we addressed the situation in a less traumatic way through our training and through our work with police. I think practice is important. I do agree with you. I don't know that to the extreme of adding trauma is the way to go, but I do think practicing these drills has been a lifesaver for us. And we have three layers. We have a lock-in, a lock-out, and a lockdown. Once we get into a lockdown, only the police can get us out of it. The other layers can be elevated to a lockdown.
Okay.
But lock-in and lock-out, we have only used those lately. We have not been in a lockdown in the past few years. And I think that is less stressful and less traumatic as well.
Oh, absolutely.
Yep.
So when does this go into effect?
The weapon detection system,
yes.
Hopefully they'll be here in the next 4 to 6 weeks. We had an example device for our last board meeting, so we showed and demonstrated what it would look like. But in the next 4 to 6 weeks, we'll have them implemented. After a month, I will give a public report on the number of searches, what we found, what it looks like, you know, what other policies need to be revisited and go from there and see how successful they are and see what we find.
Well, Dr. Dan, thank you very much. Please come back when you do that. We'd like to get an update at your pleasure.
No problem. Thank you for having us.
All right. I'm still not on board. I'm very glad he came on, though, and explained things, Dan McGarry. And we'll have him back on again. Coming up on Reading, Writing, and Reason, our final segment this week, what else is in the news around all these issues involving kids, parents, money spent, and controversies? We have that for you on Reading, Writing, and Reason.
Today's program has been pre-recorded.
I'm gonna teach ya.
Hey everyone, welcome into our final segment this week of Reading, Writing, and Reason, our weekly podcast that we'd like you to tell people about, in which we bring you all the information on what's happening in schools, why it matters, how much it costs, parental rights, and some of the biggest guests imaginable on the issues both local and national. So we've already heard from Riley Gaines this week nationally, and we heard from the superintendent of schools over in Upper Darby locally about some of the challenges, and I differ with him on this detection system. But we're seeing now another school district go the way of implementing a cell phone ban to ease classroom distractions. This would be over in Woodbury. Teachers were frustrated trying to enforce the rules in class, and they say that cyberbullying was on the rise. So students at Woodbury High School will begin lining up shortly after they arrive at 7 a.m. for a check-in to lock their cell phones for the duration of the school day. Now, you see, with these policies, I would be more in a camp, hey, you can't have your phone out in class. If the teacher sees the kid with the phone out, then they're going to get a detention. Because with this, the new policy, this arrival and all this check-in and all, man, this is time-consuming. The South Jersey School District joins a growing number of schools nationwide, says the Inquirer, that are trying to limit cell phone use while students are in school. Superintendent push for a tougher approach after the policy in place for years banning students from using it during proved difficult to enforce. Under that rule, students were instructed to keep their phones in their lockers or tucked away in backpacks. Well, I think that's the way to enforce it. This level of enforcement would be cumbersome. Senior Cassie Gallagher, 17, applauded the new policy, but acknowledged it was a culture shock. Already, she can see a change in the school environment. Students are more attentive in the classroom, socialize with each other more, especially at lunchtime. I've seen myself struggle downhill in school just because I use my phone so often in class. We're surrounded by technology so much nowadays, it's really hard to get out of that. Well, that's a good outcome. I just think the inability of the teacher authority to enforce this is pretty telling. And if this works, and it's not as cumbersome as it appears to be to me. I mean, I'm looking at schools. I'm looking at the co-principal, Dwayne Dobbins, helps his student, an 11th grader, with the locking mechanism for his phone pouch as he enters school. So I just imagine this is a lot of stuff. We have metal detectors, Upper Darby, that story, and now phone pouches. This is adding on a lot of layers of time to get this all done. So we'll continue to monitor that. One other story that caught my attention this week in Reading, Writing, and Reason and what's going on in the news when it comes to all this money spent, et cetera, is at the college level. This from News and Politics. They say, as the number of foreign students at our selective universities exceeds a third of total enrollment, it's important to remember the maximum of the 16th century physician: the dose makes the poison. From the end of World War II to 1977, the percentage of U.S. university enrollment from abroad never exceeded 2%. Foreign students add financial resources to U.S. universities because they tend to pay full tuition and sometimes brought large donations from wealthy foreign governments. The issue, though, is, here's an example. Among Ivy League institutions, the student population averages foreign student population 27 to 39%, depending on various programs at the school. Columbia University now has almost two-thirds of its total enrollment from abroad, two-thirds. And the fear is, as foreign enrollments reach critical mass, the direction of the cultural exchanges taking place in the campus has reversed. And really, these are not American universities. You get where that's going? As much as they're kowtowing to foreign cultures slash governments and or opinions on things. All right? So let's watch this. Imagine two-thirds in various programs at Columbia were not from the United States. That's a big takeaway. All right, as we head into the final stretch of presidential politics, you are going to see some issues involving schools. I still think that Republicans in particular ought to talk about parental rights in schools, school choice, those kinds of things, because there is a hunger, there's a demand out there. I realize that other issues are so big: inflation, cost of things, illegal immigration, the battle over that, the battle back and forth with going after Trump on will he end democracy, etc. But there is room targeted on these things to make the case of the difference between the two parties and the two candidates on issues involving schools. One of the biggest, Riley Gaines on the podcast today made this point, involves the issue of transgendered students, particularly in sports. These things are out there, and Vice President Harris has been pretty clear. She says she's changed her mind on things like fracking, the border, etc. But when it comes to the issues around transgender areas, she has not, or she's been evasive on it. On the others, she's tried to explain why she's changed. So I think this is an area to flesh out and debate that people really do care about. Of course, in order, inflation, immigration are the two major issues on this. And then, you know, any number of smaller things that abortion may make its way into it. But what happens in schools, particularly the transgender part of this, is something that people see deep significance in. I know it gets mocked. We're starting the cultural wars. These are real issues, though, that people on both sides have strong opinions about. So watch for more of this. Certainly, we'll be chronicling it. And remember, let people know about this podcast, Reading, Writing, and Reason, wherever you get your podcast, and many weeks here on the radio. Follow on Twitter at DomShow1210. We'll see you next week with Dom and Dan and Henry producing right here, the stories that matter, Reading, Writing, and Reason. You need a lesson, gonna bring it to you now.